Hey guys, this is Sarah, editing Sarah many months later after we originally recorded Piranesi, and it didn't get posted when we originally recorded it due to various reasons that, I just didn't want to do it. You know, we were getting back in the swing of things, but we went to go post this one, which we had in the backlog, and I was like, well, surely it can't be, there can't be any marker that would say how long ago we recorded it, and see if you can figure out, as we post this episode in April, why I was like, it's very funny that we didn't post this in December when we really should have. Anyway, that's it. That's the stupid disclaimer I wanted to put at the front. All right, love you. Goodbye.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Cracked Spines. And we are here to talk to you today about a lovely book. But first,
a book that gave us the good news of the coming of the Lord Jesus Christ. That's right, it's a Christmas it's not a Christmas episode.
No, yeah, I read the Bible from cover to cover. Did you not read? That's what we said we were going to, Sarah, we were like, let's do a Christmas episode. Let's put the Christ back in Christmas. I read the Bible. There's so much begetting. Like, 50 straight pages of begetting. I had to take notes.
You did?
I made a genealogical chart.
It doesn't...
Sarah?
Okay, name a fact.
Yeah, you got me.
I could not have been more generous in my question.
You got me. I did technically read part of the Bible, but in high school when we had to for class. I guess that's a fair thing. Like, when you're studying Western literature.
I mean, you literally gotta.
Yeah.
Like, it's... I remember the first Bible story I read was Cain and Abel because I was, like, 12 and Mom referenced Cain and Abel. Possibly talking about me and my brother, which is fucked up.
From what I understand of you and your brother's childhood dynamic, that might have made sense. were Cain, of course.
We can't even play in this space. I was sweet little Abel,
sweet little
who became
Abel.
God's favorite by being Whittle Martyr.
Hi, Matt.
Hey, Matt. Love you, brother. I was like, oh, Mom, who's Cain and Abel? And Mom's like, I've failed you, literally.
That's so funny.
And she gave me her childhood book of Bible stories. Just to be like, you need to, like, know these. You don't have to, don't believe any of them. You do just have to know them.
Just for the themes and motifs.
Yeah.
Anyways, we are not putting the Christ back in Christmas in this episode, but we are putting the Christ back in crisis. That's right. It's cookie season.
Christus?
Christus.
That
Merry Christus.
Jesus Christ. Yes. You've been doing actually a lot better this year. It's felt... knock on wood, much less pathologic.
People keep saying that to me, and it genuinely makes me feel like I'm doing something wrong. So firstly, I've not been counting all the cookies. And honestly, part of it's just been kind of forgetting to, and then not being like, oh shit, I forgot to count them. I have to unpack all of them from the freezer in order to count them so that I know exactly how many cookies I make so that I can exceed last year's previous record.
How
perpetual growth, hashtag capitalism.
Jesus Christ.
Last year I made about 1,300.
Oh, wow. That was actually more than I expected. I thought it was 1,000.
I think I just said 1,000, but I actually thought it was 1,000, but when I was checking the spreadsheet.
Yeah, the cookie spreadsheet.
Yeah, the cookie spreadsheet.
That's split into different categories of cookies and who's getting cookies and where the cookies are going to go.
You haven't even seen the cookie spreadsheet. You're just fucking making assumptions.
And
the fact that you're correct is completely beside the point.
I saw last year's cookie spreadsheet because I was staring, because last year you were, I'm sorry, fucking crazy, and our household was engulfed in just like a gingerbread haze as you cranked out like a one-woman sweatshop, the fucking sweatshop owner and the like abused child all in one.
I would never employ children in my cookie sweatshop. Their hands are too small and weak.
You need
I need girthy. Only oppressed, strong, burly man in my cookie sweatshop, which is also me.
Yeah, but you've been doing it really healthily this
You're right,
year.
I should go count them right now. I'll be right back.
No, you've been freezing them and really making... Think of the efficiency. You're really maximizing your efficiency.
That's the thing.
Efficiency.
I am maximizing the efficiency. And I kind of... Again, I hate to say this because it just sounds so fucking healthy, but I decided that I want to focus more on, like, baking cookies that I will enjoy making and eating rather than just making cookies with recipes that are easiest to mass produce.
Jesus Christ. Sorry, I just... Your discussion of cookies just evokes the Lord's name from me.
Yep. Praise Jesus in this time of our Lord.
Good God.
God spoke to me in a dream and told me that I have to make 1,400 cookies this year or he will smite the earth.
That was...
So I'm just kind of like, eh, fine, do it.
Yeah, that was...
Fucking do it.
Jacob's dream in the Bible.
The only thing I know about that is the speech that Crozier gives in The Terror about Jacob's ladder, so...
Well, I don't remember that speech, so I see we're at a loss here.
Ah, so anyways, it's you know, that's what's been going on in my life. I did start making the cookies in mid-November so that I could be freezing them and stuff. And you know what? It's actually been, I think it's been good, you know, just kind of spreading out the period of making them so that the final week, which we're now coming up on, in which I inevitably have to transform into my final evolve form, which is just like a many-armed cookie deity.
Yeah.
And then I just occupy my mom's house for 3 days straight in a kind of weird, like...
And I don't see you.
Yeah, you don't see me. I'm not gonna fucking be here.
You're actually losing a couple days that were prime cookie real estate in order to celebrate my 30th birthday.
I want you to know. It pains me. I'm kidding. I'm excited. It's going to be worth it. And I'm not going to take it out on you at all.
Which is fun because you haven't told me anything about what we're doing.
Oh, yeah. It's a surprise. I'm taking you to a ravine and throwing you into it. Happy birthday!
Don't worry. You never have to deal with being 30. But I want to.
You
too
want
late.
To. But yeah, so, you know, that's what's going on here.
Yeah. I'll also say as a slight disclaimer... for the episode, even though I mentioned this at the beginning, and Amelia said, quote, nobody cares how sleepy you are, I'm going to reiterate, I just got off work and I'm really sleepy.
No one cares. No one cares about whether you're sleepy or not. They come here for a product, Sarah, and we're going to give them the goddamn product.
I just think it's important to know that I was up all night saving lives.
How many lives did you save?
Well, you know, all four of my patients survived the night, so...
Really, thought that sentence was gonna end a different way based on the way that you were saying it.
No.
I was like, holy shit, we did not do a debrief when you got home from work. What the fuck happened?
Yeah, all four of them, just sort of, one by one, knocked off the mortal coil.
Yeah, you know, you put them all in a room together and then threw a knife in after them and said, whoever wins gets the pudding cup,
And we're on a really a post-surgical floor. They can't move very well.
Yeah, exactly. You had to unplug them from all of their, like, support mechanisms in order to put them into the Hunger Games room. And actually, that might have pitched the battle a little bit.
I want you to tell me, when you say unplugged them from their various support mechanisms, I just want you to, like, tell me what one of them is.
Intubated? Catheter?
Catheter is correct!
IV!
Yeah! But not intubated.
Hey, remember that time when you said an acronym about something, and then you said the first two parts of it and couldn't remember the third one, and then somehow I knew it?
Okay, yeah, what was that?
I don't know. I just temporarily absorbed your knowledge. Anyways.
Remember that time I was talking about the peripheral nervous system, the PNS, and you thought I was saying penis in a really weird way, and you didn't understand that I was talking about a neurological system in the body?
No, I knew what you were saying. I was just being a dipshit about it.
No, there was confusion in your eyes.
The PNS. That's where the catheter goes, right?
Yeah.
I'm so good at medicine. I could be a nurse.
You could be. Not a good one, but you could be.
Anyways, I don't think there's going to be a elegant transition from either cookie baking or Hunger Games nursing into our book for this week.
No, I've got it. Speaking of pointless academic arguments.
That's, like, not much, honestly. We didn't even make an academic argument about whether or not it is morally good to bake an increased amount of cookies every year for the foreseeable future.
I mean, actually, if anything, more and more people ask for cookies. The demand is only rising.
Exactly! See, I should go count the cookies! What if I don't have enough?
But in the house that makes up the world of Piranesi by Susanna Clarke, there is no capitalism.
And there are no cookies. So it's a tragedy, you see.
Yeah, he eats a lot of just fish.
Seaweed.
So.
That's basically sushi. Maybe that kind of rules, actually. Did we consider that?
I mean, his life does seem to kind of rule, except for the ways that totally sucks.
Yeah.
But hey, you like this book, correct?
I fucking love this book.
Why? And what is it about?
Wouldn't you like to know? So firstly,
twice in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, you've read it now more than me, actually, so I guess you're now officially a bigger fan of it than I am. That's how that works. So Piranesi by Susanna Clarke is essentially, the thing is, I don't want to say too much about it because I went into it pretty much blind and was completely delighted by everything about it. But I suppose that a brief summary would not be amiss. It's essentially from the point of view of a character who is writing a diary, and over the course of it, pretty much immediately, you're like, hey, bro, where the fuck are you and what is happening? You're apparently in some kind of massive house that is half flooded and half exposed to the elements, and it's all made of stone and full of these mysterious statues, but this is apparently all very normal to you, ? And there appears to only be one other person in the entire world, which once again is this massive stone edifice, And that's pretty much the concept of the book. And just over the course of it, you learn a lot more about, like, who this person is and what's happening. And it's a very satisfying, I would say it's really a mystery is the way that the plot is structured, because it's very much about answering the question of, like, what the fuck is happening here? And you know I love that.
Yes. And I really love the way that it makes use of an unreliable narrator, but, like, unreliable narrator who is questioning his own reliability and is cross-referencing and is examining his world and is realizing, like, his own gaps in the knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
It's genuinely fascinating to watch a character navigate around their own, like, almost magically induced blind spot.
Yeah. And yeah, I loved the main character, who for a good part of the book is known as Piranesi. And I thought it was really interesting to have a character who has, like, a very, both kind of, like, scientific interest in his surroundings, but this also very, like, religious and awe-inspired view of it.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that I would love to talk about this book specifically is the kind of dichotomy of, in many ways, this is kind of a haunted house story. That's how it was originally pitched to me. But in a way that is so interesting to me and in a way that I kind of love more than any other haunted house, quote-unquote, book that I've read.
Also, I don't think it's a haunted house story. I think it's a haunting house, but I don't think it has the hallmarks of what I would consider to be haunted house literature. As in, it's a little bit, like, I guess Hill House actually would be a pretty good comparison. Like, what if the house from Hill House didn't completely fucking suck?
Mm-hmm. Well, what would you say are the hallmarks of haunted house literature?
I think there has to be more of an exploration of what is causing this, like, why is it like this, this almost, like, well, you know, it's like, as I'm saying, it's like,
I'm
yeah.
just waiting to disagree with you.
I know. it doesn't feel like a haunted house story to me, even a haunted house story that is unconventional.
I think I can definitely see that, because it's like, the plot itself is not about, Well, I mean, because as here, I guess this is just us starting to make a statement and then immediately bailing on it. Because I was going to say, you know, in a normal haunted house story, there's this sense of, like, digging deeper into the horror of the house. Mm-hmm. And, like, in a way, I think Piranesi also does that. But it's just in such a way that it's, like, it's not about... It's like, what if you had a haunted house story where the horror was replaced with beauty and awe, but there was also some genuinely terrifying things that were happening in it?
I think the horror is so completely derived from... spoiler warning, just people, you know? And I know a lot of horror does that. Oh, people are the real monsters, you know? But... I don't know, it's just... The house just slaps really hard.
It's cool. I love it. And that's the thing. It's like, when I say a haunted house, I think, again, to me, this is a haunted house story that is not frightening and is not... does not have a horror element, which is, I think, a really interesting idea. It's like, how do you explore this structure, which is so imbued with this personality, you know, this sense of intention and presence that in most stories that I've seen this about is seen to be a horrifying thing. Like, you know, this structure is somehow alive. And does that mean that when we are inside of it, we are consumed by it, you know? But I feel like for Piranesi, it was like the house is like unquestionably given this sense of like, of consciousness and presence and like godhood almost in like very vague ways. It's in a very much kind of like transcendental, like capital R romanticism, like, you know, nature and God kind of thing. But it's given the same sort of treatment that a haunted house might be given in a horror story, except that the narrator is not horrified by it. The narrator is enchanted by it. And there is definitely like elements of, you kind of, again, you like look at this person and you're like, hey buddy, how'd you get here and what's going on, and there's a lot of weird stuff that's happening and you just seem fine with it, but I don't know if you should be fine with it.
You seem to think only 16 people have ever existed in the entire course of 15 actually, and six, you're hoping for a 16th.
And I think there's, like, a lot of cool elements where, like, there were parts in the book where it's, like, I didn't feel unnerved, but I think they were unnerving parts of the book. You know, it's, like, they, there's, like, a scene where the character, like, goes on this, like, long journey to this, like, other hall, and there's, like, a moment of, like, the shadows and the darkness being, like, very kind of frightening, but then it ultimately ends up resolving into something that is, like, beautiful, which, again, is, I think... just a kind of microcosm for what this book does overall. And I think a really interesting comparison for it, which I was going to try to like keep under wraps until we started talking about the episode, but right before we started recording it, you were like, I can't wait to compare this to House of Leaves.
No, what I said was, I don't want to keep dunking on House of Leaves.
I do. Which again, you know, just a bit of backstory. I think we both... feel very strongly about House of Leaves, and that there's so much about it that I think we both really liked and enjoyed, and then there's some other significant things about it that we fucking hated. And it's truly hard to say how those two factors ended up, you know, evening out in the long run.
Like, do you give the book a C, like, as a grade because one part was an A and one part was an F?
Yeah, it's, like, so hard to say.
You know? Or do you just say, hey, don't read any of Johnny's parts and you will miss nothing and you will be fine.
Just fucking skip them. But yeah, House of Leaves is also very much a book that is about a person exploring this massive, strange, liminal space that seems utterly alien to, like, human beings. Although I would say, I think the one major difference is that the house in Piranesi does not seem alien to like human beings in the same way by any means.
I'd say another big difference is that at no point does Piranesi ejaculate and then be very sad about it.
God, yeah.
You know? At no point does he like look at a statue and think, that statue's a beautiful woman, and I'm gonna have sex with it.
I'm gonna have sex with it, and, I'm gonna have a lot of weird ideas about women while it's happening.
And don't worry, it's gonna go on for a long time.
And will there be anything relating to the plot of the book? Not really.
But they do share the core of not just this exploration of a fucked up geography.
Which I love, a good exploration of a fucked up geography.
Of course. Especially a fucked up one where it's like, well, this seems like it should be man-made, but how could it be man-made?
Exactly.
Which is also delicious.
Yeah, because otherwise, you know, Annihilation is another one of my favorite books that shares that theme of...
You like weird places.
Yeah, and actually, now that you mention it, the tower in Annihilation is also very much a, huh, this seems like it should be man-made, but it's not. Yeah.
And if it is, what the fuck does that mean?
Yeah.
But not just this exploration of these particular places, but through this specifically academic lens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, House of Leaves has this conceit of being an essay written, or I think a full book written about a film that doesn't exist, complete mm-hmm. with citations that don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And Piranesi, likewise, starts as almost like a research journal, but like a research journal slash diary, and then encompasses the world of academia and has fake articles.
Yeah.
And this entire like emphasis on
like learning and the scientific method and like
scholarship.
Yeah.
And publication in a way that's a really interesting comparison.
Sarah, are we a couple fucking shills for academia? I mean, in the past 2 weeks, we've both respectively been like, should we go back to grad school?
That's not special. Every day of my life, I wake up and I think, should I go back to grad school? And every day of my life, I go back to sleep thinking, nah, I'm good.
Yeah,
I shouldn't go to grad school. But then in the middle of the night, yeah, the thoughts do whisper. Like, wouldn't it be fun to get an MFA, you little piece of shit?
Don't you want to go back and spend all your savings on a degree that probably won't really do anything for your life, but also, yeah, maybe. So yeah, I think like the comparison between this book and House of Leaves is very interesting. And once again, because it's like, it truly is like, what if the family that moved into the fucked up house in House of Leaves was just sort of like delighted and amazed by the fact that their mm-hmm. house is slightly bigger on the inside and then much bigger on the inside.
Yeah. But with a bunch of asterisks really attached mm-hmm. to that you can't really get into without discussing the latter half of the book and starting to unravel the mystery of how the character of Piranesi came to be where he is.
Yes.
And like, yeah, it's probably not ideal for him in some circumstances, but by God, did he adapt pretty well.
Yeah, and I think, so we are, I think, at some point in this episode, just going to have to enter the spoiler zone, because I do really want to talk more about that, especially in the context of the book being framed as a haunted house, which I will not let go of. But I do feel like one of the things that I absolutely love about this book is the sense of beauty attributed to things which can seem like remote and horrible and frightening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this character lives a really hard life. Yeah, this character lives a really hard life and is in fairly frequent danger from the tides that routinely flood this place and from having to like get enough like food to survive the seasons and being kind of limited by the whims of the one other living person who he is you know, at times in this house with. But the character's sort of outlook on it is so positive, I think. And
he loves his life.
Yeah, he does. And it's like, you know, again, as you go through the book, you're kind of like, you sort of like see how in many ways it is a kind of coping mechanism. But I think like that aspect of looking at things which could be considered like horrible and seeing how they are actually wonderful is something that I really enjoy.
I know we've decided not to discuss our cat's activities on the podcast because we would never stop, but I want you to know that while Amelia was bravely persevering with that statement, our cat Scurvy launched herself vertically in the air, grabbing the curtains around my bed, and just sort of swung around Tarzan style for a while.
I think I'm getting much better at just continuing to talk while this happens.
It's, I mean, if we stopped to comment every time our cat is a absolute menace, we would never finish anything.
It's so true. But yeah, you know, it kind of, it ties in a bit to a couple of other books that I've read recently, which this might seem like a bit of a leap of logic, but
it's called The Bible?
Yeah, it's called The Bible. Have y'all heard of it? The Bible says if you don't make 1,500 Christmas cookies every December, then a new flood will wash across the land.
And that's bad?
No, it's great, actually.
Good.
I'm Piranesi. So yeah, this book kind of reminds me in some ways of a couple books that I read this year. The first one was What Moves the Dead by T. Kingfisher, and the second one was Leech by Hyron McGinnis. Both of those books were ones that had this element of a mystery and a sense of kind of creeping dread, which again is not really a factor in Piranesi, but you have to understand, because I was reading it, I was not experiencing the creeping dread. I was experiencing the creeping awe, the, ooh, is the really fucked up thing gonna actually happen in this? And in both books, I thought it was interesting because there was this element that for me, I'll go ahead and give like a slightly minor spoiler for What Moves the Dead and a not at all spoiler for Leech. Both have an element of a kind of hive mind. Mm. And for me, I fucking love that shit. Did you know? and I was like really excited by how that element was going to be explored in both of them. And unfortunately, in both books, the conclusion that was drawn was very much like the characters unequivocally think that this is a thing that is horrifying and bad. They react to it as something that needs to be destroyed, and that's kind of the end of the discussion in it. And I really had hoped that both of them would go more the direction of Piranesi, where it's like, yeah, like, there are things about this that are objectively, like, horrifying and terrible, and, like, you can absolutely, like, frame this book as a horror story for this character, but instead it's framed as like a character who has come to see this thing which could be horrible as something that is beautiful. And that's like my fucking favorite thing, and that's really what I had been kind of hoping for some of these other narratives, because I feel like there's such an interesting idea to be explored in the idea of, you know, specifically for What Moves the Dead and for Leech, and an organism which essentially requires others in order to survive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the kind of conclusion that both books draw on a, like, thematic level is, well, then you should just die. And I'm like, no, hive minds are cool, though. Like, there's a lot of fucked up things in both books that I'm like, yeah, I mean, you're not wrong, but like I think that it's so much more interesting and cool to mm-hmm. explore how concepts like that can be seen through this lens of like in a more complicated yeah. and like,
well, it's like that classic, like, what is Gothicism except romanticism, but it's horrifying.
Yeah,
like the idea of like awe and terror being so functionally the same thing that the genres are just you deciding how you feel about this over-encompassing, transcendent emotion of something much vaster and larger and stranger than you.
Exactly. And maybe that thing is a massive house that you don't understand how it got there or what it is. Mm-hmm. And maybe that thing is a hive mind.
Exactly. And in either case, you gotta live in them forever.
Yep, you gotta live in them forever. Unless you don't.
Unless you don't. I liked Piranesi a lot, but I wished there was honestly more darkness and dread in the house. I think the house is, And maybe this is me bringing my own reading to it, and really uncritically accepting Piranesi's view of the house. because I'm like, yeah, this house sounds really cool and horrifying, but the horror is so understated through the viewpoint character that you really are just left with this, not even awe at times, this almost domestic bliss of like, this is just his home. It's the world to him. This is like the playground he romps in, and like the place that gives him nourishment and food. And it's this weird combination of like, rather than this awe-encompassing feeling I had with the house, I had much more of this small domestic sense, which was not a bad feeling, and which worked very well with the strangeness of the house, and the idea of like the strange world that you've built. But I like wanted there to be more fucked up parts of the house. I wanted a little bit of Hill House, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that the book needed that on an objective level, but I would have personally liked it. Yeah, would have loved it. Because I do think that like this book does not have a lot of horror elements, but if it had more horror elements, I would have been fucking delighted.
Yeah.
But I think that's just probably not what it was really wanting to explore. I do think that, like, there's a really fascinating tension between what the narrator is saying and the things that he, and the way that he's saying it, or the, like, yeah. I think there's, like, there is that sense of an unreliable narrator where you're like, you know, hey, are you, like, actually happy here? Hey, do you, like, actually, are you actually as well-adjusted as you seem? And I think you could make an argument that, like, yeah. But I think there is also, for me, as I was reading it, there's this really interesting tension of being like, oh, it's so clear that the narrator is unaware of things about himself. That,
yeah.
That sense increased the tension and the again, dread is the wrong word, but like that sense of like the kind of creeping horror elements that I think were really effective in this.
And there are like these horrifying parts, and they're not even very far from the surface. The horrifying parts, like the novel is in, like almost like the narrator pulling back and being like, my God, this is horrifying. Like, there is like, I really like this book. There's a part of me though that I would love to see a more horrifying version of it. I would love that.
So I would love to talk, because I was going to say, I wanted to talk a bit about specifically how this book could have very easily been much more of a horror novel. But I know you were also talking about, you mentioned before we started recording about wanting to talk about some of the author's other works.
Yeah, I suppose we can touch on that before we hit up the spoiler zone. Susanna Clarke also wrote Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, a large, thick book about Victorian magicians that reads very much like it was written in the Victorian era as well, and what I think is a very nice, like, I don't know, a very good writer voice trick. And I have very fond memories of it because I read it in England when I studied abroad. And I got a library card at the local library in the town that I was in, which was right above their Waitrose, which honestly seems dope as hell, Waitrose being a grocery store. Like, the idea that I could just combine those two things into one thing.
That's everything you need for sustenance.
That ruled.
Yeah.
And that book was so heavy and thick, and the library was so far from my apartment, or flat, as the Brits say. You can kill me. and I just have fond memories of lugging it around Bath, this enormous book, like, door stopper of a book.
It really is pretty big.
And I have really wanted to reread it, and I have not, because it is a thick door stopper of a book.
I'd like to reread it too, actually. Maybe we should, you know.
Well, that would be really fun. Did you see the TV show?
I did, yeah, I enjoyed it. I think I like the book better because I think a lot of things that I liked about the book were about the writing style and how like it did such a good job of conjuring that kind of archaic writing style, but in a way that was still very readable. But I thought the TV show was really fun and a fairly good adaptation of it. It was a little bit like goofy at times, but like what can you do, you know? sometimes when you translate something visually from a book, it's just going to be hard to, like, do it in a way where it doesn't, like, when you're actually seeing it, that it isn't a little bit silly, yeah. You know?
Would you want Piranesi the movie?
Yes, but I would have extreme reservations about whether it would be good, because it is, like, I don't know, it is so reliant on the point of view, mm-hmm. and the, like, the fact that you are getting this story relayed from the character's perspective, and with the necessity of a story being told from the outside in a film, I think you could still do it, but I think it would maybe be a little less effective than the book was.
I think it should be adapted as a video game, but specifically one of those FMV video games, which had, like, actual just camera footage mm-hmm. of people, like, and in the background is a CGI background, and you should have Piranesi go on little quests, and it should be so clunkily rendered.
I love that, actually.
I think that would be really good.
Yeah, but God, I want to see the house is the thing.
Oh, but it would be rendered, but, like, in, like, enough detail to really whet your appetite, but also enough to be like, I can't see shit. This is some real PlayStation 2 graphics.
God, that sounds great, honestly.
Yeah.
But yeah, do we want to talk a bit, do we want to enter the spoiler zone and talk about some of the aspects of the later half of the book?
Yes! Let's discuss the end half.
Yes.
The second half. I'm sleepy.
I can tell. So, basically, you find out that Piranesi is actually a normal guy from our world who has essentially been trapped in this liminal dimension by a fucked up academic who is, like, just on many levels bad. Mm-hmm. And that Piranesi, I think it's, like, an aspect of the house that affects his memory, isn't
yes,
it?
The
As
house,
opposed to just a coping mechanism.
Yeah, the house causes amnesia and, like, the loss of your mind. Mm-hmm. A little bit.
Yeah, and he discovers this, and he is, like, given the option to, like, escape, essentially. And it does have, I'd say, a fairly happy ending, but a kind of bittersweet one, where it's, like, he kind of realizes that, like, he's never going to be the person that he was mm-hmm. In his life beforehand. Mm-hmm. But that he still has this deep reverence for the house and still mm-hmm. thinks that it is beautiful and has this kind of, like, this new sense of this realization that there is something, like, deeper to the house, mm-hmm. but he still maintains that sense of awe about it.
And the fact that he, like, is just, like, cool, I live in your world and I visit the house whenever I want,
uh-huh.
is dope as hell.
Yeah.
And the fact that, like, the character who found and rescued him, also just, like, goes and visits the house.
Yeah,
it's
that's
like
kind of ideal.
Every character in this book that is sympathetic at the end is like, but we're gonna take day trips, right?
Yeah.
To the
yeah.
house.
Which, honestly, that's so fair. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so what I was saying about the kind of horror elements of this book is, like, you know, A, if they had just focused more on that aspect of, like, memory loss and, like, the kind of horror around mm-hmm. realizing that you don't know your own mind, yeah. like, I think that absolutely would have amped up the horror factor. But also, if they had just set this book slightly earlier.
I was literally yeah. about to say, this book set 5 years earlier in this dude's timeline.
Yeah, would have been very, very much a horror story.
Yeah, and this is a reasonable question to be like, does the character die? Mm-hmm. As he seems to fully think of himself as a person who has, it's like the same body and the same brain, but, like, is not the same person.
Yeah.
He does not, he treats the person he was the same way that he treats the dead people in the house.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I think, like, I don't know, I almost want to simultaneously read, you know, like, a prequel to this that would mm-hmm. be that type of story, while at the same time I feel very certain that I would not like it as much as this one, but frankly I just kind of want more content in mm-hmm. this world, because it was really cool. And yeah, I think, like, the thing that I liked about this was the fact that it could have so easily been more horrifying, but wasn't.
Yeah.
And that's, like, when am I going to be the one saying that, you know? Because mm-hmm. normally I'm, like, a little horror freak.
You're a little horror freak. And I do think the story of a man slowly losing his mind and his self in a strange place is a cool one, but not one that we haven't heard.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I do wish more works engaged with the sort of reverence cosmic horror can evoke.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say that this is cosmic horror, but I also wouldn't say it's not cosmic horror. It's got cosmic horror tastes.
Exactly. I would definitely agree with that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think, like, it's just a really cool book on many levels, on the like, writing style, the, like, narrator. I love Piranesi. I think he's a really cool narrator, and yeah. I felt, like, deeply sympathetic to him.
And I love how so many characters are like, wow, you seemed like a real asshole before this!
This is, you know, get trapped into an endless liminal house. It's better than therapy.
Yeah. I mean, you used to be pretty annoying, and now you're like a really nice guy who cares about albatrosses and, you know, is just sort of a nice chap.
Yeah. So I'm glad that you read this. I'm glad that you also enjoyed it.
I did. And I liked it a lot, and I'm also glad to have something new from Susanna Clarke, because I really liked Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Has she written any other novels?
She wrote, I believe, The Ladies of Grace Adieu, but that was within the universe of the Norrellverse, as we Norrellheads call it.
Why isn't it the Strangeverse, huh?
Because Marvel copyrighted.
Oof. Also, we should read that.
Yes.
Cool.
And then we should pair it with another Victorian novel and never finish that episode. Let's do Bleak House.
The thing is, next year, one of my reading goals is probably going to be to read more, like, Victorian literature. Other than Christmas Carol, I've never actually read Charles Dickens, but every time that I encounter a quote, like, a chunk of Charles Dickens's work, which is fairly often based on the stuff that I like, I'm always like, wow, this is good, actually.
We should read Tale of Two Cities. It's fucking nuts.
You know what? We probably should, because I just technically was supposed to have read it in high school and lied my way into not reading it. I still got an A, because I'm a little schemer.
Yeah, a little scamp. I will undoubtedly say this if we do this episode as well, but I was so in love with the final line of that novel that I got my graphing calculator out and I typed it out on there in just full text, like, a couple times over during math class, because I couldn't stop thinking about how much I love that line.
You're such a little dork. Speaking of final lines, I do love the final line in Piranesi, yes. Which is kind of a recurring theme throughout the book. I'm just going to read it since we're, you know, in the spoiler zone, and it's also not really a spoiler. Also, why are there, like, 20 blank pages at the end of Piranesi? There's so many blank pages.
It's... Sometimes there's just, like, a lot of blank pages at the end of books, and I don't know why.
Yeah, they're like, they just want to trick you.
It feels like someone miscounted something.
Or that they're like, ooh, it's so artisanal the way that we left so many blank pages. You know, maybe there's something to do with the way they bind the book? That doesn't make
sense. I think there's something had to do with how... I always figured it had something to do with binding, but then just use less...
Yeah, just... I don't know, it doesn't really make sense to me. Anyways, the last line in Piranesi is, "The beauty of the house is immeasurable, its kindness infinite." And I think that's, like, a good thesis statement, you know, especially in the way that the context of that line kind of changes over the course of the book from something that is taken kind of, like, a little uncritically to something where it's like, oh, you start to understand that, like, the world is, like, a darker place than you initially thought it was, but you still are able to see and love the beauty in it. Yeah. And I think that's, like, a takeaway from this book that I really love. Mm-hmm. I just love Piranesi so much, the character.
He's a little sweet boy.
God. Perfect cinnamon roll. Too good for this world. So we trapped him in another dimension.
And honestly, it seems like before that he was maybe like a bran muffin.
Yeah, before that he was an unbaked cinnamon roll.
Unbaked
and the house
cinnamon
was
roll.
The oven that baked him into a beautiful caramelized crispness.
Yeah, I do. I like the signs of the old personality that he had. And it, I... God, can you, how sad would it be if your loved one disappeared for 6 years and then came back and he's like, hey, FYI, I'm not him.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can look at me. I keep him in my heart and I carry him with me, but he's sleeping and I honor him as the dead.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's like, it's very tragic, but it's also very beautiful, I think. Yeah. And it's like a very, like, I don't know, it's like an interesting way to think about like trauma and, mm-hmm. and like how you are, you become such a different person yeah. after that.
And maybe, I don't know, maybe there's Piranesi 2, like
Electric Boogaloo.
Piranesi 2, where he's like, oh shit, I guess maybe I am Matthew Rose Sorensen. Mm-hmm. Huh, crazy.
Yeah. But I think it's like, it, I did not feel like there was anything left undone with mm-hmm. with his character journey.
Yeah.
I wasn't like, oh, I need you to reconcile them. It felt like very much like a kind of like peaceful ending for the character. And,
yeah.
and that sense of like, yeah, maybe his view of himself will change over time. But at the same time, it's kind of like, yeah, you know, sometimes mm-hmm. something happens to you and you are just a different person after yeah. it.
Well, it's interesting because he, at the end, he's like, he's saying that he's not the person, he's not Matthew Rose Sorensen, but he's also saying he's not Piranesi.
Yeah.
He has fully become a third thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a neat book.
It's pretty good.
And it is, there's a lot of fun things with identity you could kind of look at within it.
Yeah.
But we won't. Good night. Sorry.
Sounds like somebody has hit their sleepiness wall. But we don't care. No sympathy.
I didn't sleep so good yesterday.
15 more minutes of discussing identity of the character Piranesi.
I think it's interesting that the way that he names characters and gives them identities, and then we sort of unravel the mystery. Oh, sorry. I'm wait.
And she's back.
It's like the video game The Voyage of the Obra Dinn.
Oh, yeah.
Where you are presented with these 3D scenes of tragedy. Jesus Christ. And you are trying to figure out essentially like who on the ship roster is who.
Mm-hmm.
It actually reads, it reads a lot like that.
Yeah, that's a really interesting comparison.
Yeah.
Nice. I want to replay that. I actually never finished it because it made me feel nauseous while playing it. Like the something it, about the visuals, like maybe gave me, like, vertigo or something.
I remember you said the same thing about What Remains of Edith Finch.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's, like, the... Well, I don't know. I mean, we played plenty of games together that are, like, first person. Anyways.
Anyway, this isn't the point. The point is, good book. And good also, book. Susanna Clarke, I liked how short it was.
Yeah.
Don't take that as a dig at the other book's length. It's just
but
it's
also...
Like, yeah.
It's pretty long.
This one's like 200.
Yeah.
200 pages, in and out.
I was actually thinking, I had been toying with the idea of getting a Piranesi-themed tattoo at some point, which is still in the back of my mind, so
hell yeah.
We shall see. Should I go bake some more cookies?
I mean, you're behind schedule.
I'm behind schedule. I don't even know if I'm behind schedule. I don't know how many cookies I've made, Sarah.
Well... Can I suggest that also, like, we don't have, like, unlimited freezer space?
Yeah, I've been already giving some of them to Mom to put in her
Seriously?
Freezer.
Seriously? Yeah. Well, we still don't have that much freezer space.
We need to buy a home together, and just so that we can have, like, one of those giant, like, meat locker freezers that you can fit a whole human body in.
Yeah.
And then a second one for the cookies.
All right, well, I guess we could just...
Just peter on out of here.
I guess, I mean, we could just sort of lose what remains of ourselves and sort of become a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, more adapted to our current circumstances and happy, but God, what have we lost, you know?
I mean, what is a person if not the combination of all of their various parts that are then mixed together...
Jesus
and,
Christ.
...and then transmuted... into an entirely different thing that we won't count.
Like, never?
Because we're all very healthy. Like Piranesi, I'm very mentally well-adjusted, and I'm fine with the things that I don't know. I'm fine with it.
I mean,
the beauty of the house is immeasurable. Its kindness infinite.
I mean, I would like to know how many cookies.
I know! Okay, eventually I will count them. But maybe only after. Actually, that sounds so much worse. What if I count them and I'm, like, one short?
Then break a cookie in half and count it as
doesn't
two.
Doesn't count! Okay.
And our theme music is by Snow Ghost. Thank you, Snow Ghost. So sorry that you have been locked eternally in an infinite mansion. But on the plus side, the birds are pretty cute.
The birds are pretty cute. And you get to eat nothing but sushi every day. So, kind of rules, actually.
You can find us at Gmail. You know, that sentence people say. You can find us at our Gmail at crackspinespodcast@gmail.com.
And if we ever used our social media, you could find us on Instagram at crackspinespod.
And Twitter at spinescast. But we won't use them. We won't use them.
Frankly, everything that's been going down with Twitter has only validated me being like, yeah, good, I'm glad I never fucking did that.
Yeah, I guess you can find me on Tumblr, but again, it's my little secret, I guess.
It's for our secret fans, only fans, foot pics.
I do offer foot pics. You have to tip. $1 gets you one toe.
Wow. Charging a premium, I see.
Yeah, but if you, it's $4.50 actually for all five. I offer a small discount.
Oh, that's a great bargain.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
I get it for free. Thank you.